Oh my gosh, I've lost my train of thought. Sorry, there's a cute dog outside. So hello, everyone. Today, we're going to have a group chat about capitalism. You might know that I've already recorded a Vulnerability Talks episode on this topic. If you haven't listened yet, you can definitely check that out wherever you listen to your podcasts. But I'm super stoked to get into this topic a little bit more with the team, as we all have such diverse backgrounds and perspectives. And hopefully we can demystify this topic a little bit for everyone and learn some good info along the way. So let's dive in. I was thinking we could start by defining capitalism. And if you haven't cracked open a textbook in a few years, no judgment, but I'd love to know what comes to mind for you when I mention that word.
Jackie, I can honestly say I've never cracked open a textbook where capitalism is defined. but I feel like, I don't really know like how I define it in my head, but like just like some things that come to mind are just like large scale like corporations and like just like very like, you know, like the kind of thing that just I do not associate with like climate action, like small businesses and all that kind of stuff. So that's where my mind goes.
Yeah, I think for me, like when this question was posed, like in the group, I just did a quick Wikipedia search because I was actually curious like what the Wikipedia definition of capitalism is. And it states simply that capitalism is an economic system based on the private ownership of the means of production and their operation for profit. So to me, that makes sense because the wealthy few own the labor force, they own the means of production, and they're the ones who benefit from the means of production. Capitalism to me means also requiring the securement of new cheap forms of labor and the exploitation of the environment in order to make investment profitable and to constantly accumulate more wealth. And within a capitalist society, wealth is power. And that power is often held within wealthy few.
I just want to build on that. It's an ideology where the means of production is controlled by private business. So basically like what Emily mentioned and what you mentioned, Michaela, it means that individual citizens run the economy without the government interfering in production or pricing. So what this means is that pricing is set by the free market, which is something that I learned as I was kind of researching this topic. And that means that value is based on supply and demand and the relationship between producers and consumers. And capitalism was kind of, it's an economic model that understands we'll always have economic prosperity because we will always be like, we will always innovate to be able to supply whatever the demand is, even if we run out of resources for a specific product or like a specific service, we're always going to find new ways or alternatives to still be able to supply that, whatever way that looks like. And so that was something that I kind of came across today.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Brenna. Jess, do you have any thoughts before I maybe talk a little bit about what I think capitalism is?
Yeah, I think what comes to mind for me is competition at its root and constant growth, like you all were saying. And tied into that, since it is such a private endeavor, greed feels like it's like that's like the first word that comes to mind for me on like a emotional level when I hear capitalism. And yeah, how that fundamentally seems to go against the environmental movement.
Thank you everyone for sharing. I think that a common theme that came out of that discussion is kind of that we're operating in this capitalistic society and it feels really bad. And it doesn't feel like it's benefiting anyone and it doesn't seem like the things that we care about are represented in the market. And I really resonate with a lot of those things. We kind of touched on this notion of a privately owned means of production and very little government intervention, which kind of results in large, concentrated, and powerful companies. And I think this is definitely how we see capitalism incarnate today. But the definition I know and learned is a little bit more broad in the sense that it characterizes capitalism in theory as opposed to in this context. And that definition focuses on how we allocate scarce resources, which is through this channel of supply and demand, and can really apply to anything, whether that be like natural resources or your time or, you know, apples. And this involves that price mechanism that was already mentioned. And the flexibility of capitalism, I think, stems from the fact that this pricing mechanism can incorporate really any values that our society so chooses. And that might kind of be where the disconnect lies today, in the sense that those values have become really distant from what most of us want. And then another thing that was mentioned was kind of this idea that broadly there's like little to no government intervention. And I think where the idea of capitalism that I'm presenting you with deviates from that is in the sense that capitalism needs the government to be there and step in when necessary, and it cannot operate without that kind of crutch and support and reciprocity.
So I guess when you say that you don't agree with people owning the means of production and the whole notion around like the labor force, then who do you see as owning the means of production within this free market economy?
I actually think this is really interesting. Like, as a disclaimer, I obviously studied economics in school, and I think that what they teach you in economic theory is really different from what they teach you in like political theory, for instance. So I think that there's like some natural clashing of those definitions in that sense. But in terms of the means of production, I guess what I think about is like capital and labor, right? And there are the capitalists, and then the laborers sell their labor to the capitalists. But when I think about how flexible capitalism is, I consider that we no longer are in this place where we only have physical capital, for instance. So you can have like human capital or social capital or natural capital. So the owners of those things are different than whoever just like owns industrial production, for instance. So if you have a university education, you're the owner of your own social capital. Or if you're an indigenous knowledge holder, then you're the owner of that social capital. Like, I think that that's kind of where the system has, what's the word I'm looking for? Evolved. So it's like a much more broad definition, I guess, in my mind, where, as I said before, I think the things that we value are the things that then factor into prices. And so at the crux of it, whatever we value at that point in time is what feeds into the market. And through kind of this industrial revolution, I think we've created like a really toxic value system where we value like profits and greed and kind of coming out on top at any cost. And I think those values can be manipulated, but also reformed based on like democracy, because it all feeds through our political system and then through our economic system and in this kind of like cycle.
I love that you started talking about values, because I think that when I think about capitalism, I think it was an economic model made to benefit social prosperity. Like, I think it was made to like obviously benefit everybody in quotations and increase the wealth of everybody. However, capitalism isn't the only player here, and we have a lot of systemic ingrained inequalities in our system that capitalism operates under. And so as a result, like the values of capitalism have been ones that represent like predominantly white and like privileged and like patriarchal values, which is why we're seeing so much inequality and such and we're still seeing the unequal distribution of wealth. And like Bernie Sanders would be great to have this conversation with right now. But like those, and so I think what's really interesting is like, especially this year, is like we're seeing so much upheaval in our social systems. There's so much anger and like just energy into the movement of like Black Lives Matter and like lifting up BIPOC communities and like Indigenous sovereignty and things like that. And like, I think that hopefully as the greater whole of our societies become like more aware and angered, and they're trying to change the system. Hopefully capitalism adopts different values, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that we get to decide what those values are. So it is super significant that we're having all of these kind of moments where we're standing up and saying, like, we're not going to stand for racial injustice. We're not going to stand for environmental degradation. And those things are no longer going to be ignored in our value system. And so when I think about capitalism, I was trying to think of like a really good way to explain how I think those things can actively feed into it. I didn't think of one, but I can come up with kind of a janky like sports metaphor as someone who's not that into sports. But I guess the way I think about it is, for capitalism, is that like you have a bunch of people show up to a location and they're going to play the game. And whatever rules are in place determine what game they play. So that game might be soccer or football or hockey. And the idea of capitalism is that each individual or team will work to optimize whatever's happening within that given set of rules. So I think typically capitalism is kind of associated with this like anti-government rhetoric. And I just, as an economist, know that that's not true, because economic theory has defined all these places and owns up to all these places where we say like, nope, the market's not going to cut it there. And that happens in the case of monopoly power, for instance, which like leads to inequality. And it happens when we have a shared resource, like our planet. And so in those instances, you really need this force to step in. And right now, the government isn't playing that role at all. So I would say the rules of the game need to be changed in order for us to play a game that's, number one, on a level playing field, and something that we can all prosper from and enjoy.
Do you all remember when it was like a few years ago, Dove came out with their like, oh, bodies are beautiful campaign, and they were like not airbrushing, and they celebrated like women of different colors and like different body sizes. And then somebody was like, you all realize that like Dove is connected to Gillette, right? Like the brand, like Dove is owned by the same company that also owns Gillette, that like is the complete opposite. They're like, just be a man and like get women and throw them out like toilet paper, like kind of situation. And so when you said monopoly, like that's how I started to think about it, how we have so many different companies that all have different names, but when you actually start to like trace them back into like this big pyramid, you realize that it's only like five companies that honestly run 95% of our commodities, kind of thing, which is just really scary. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that that's a really important thing to talk about, because I know Jess mentioned competition, and Michaela mentioned power. And one of the explicit market failures of capitalism is market power, because when you have all that power concentrated, there's no such thing as competition. Like, who can compete with Dove, you know, if you're a small business? So part of the responsibility of the players that are playing the game, but also of our government and our democracy, is to ensure that, you know, that's not gone unchecked. Because if it is, then we end up in a situation like we're in today, where like now we're in this vicious cycle where our political system is run by all of these big corporations, and then that further feeds into like corporate power and greed, and like, how do we escape? But I don't think that those things are inherent to capitalism. I think that's kind of just where we've ended up today.
Okay, so I think that what I'm gathering is that from your perspective, Jackie, and maybe also from your perspective, Brenna, you're talking about changing the definition of capitalism in order to change the values of capitalism. But from my perspective and just my knowledge of what I know about capitalism, it's a definition that was defined over 500 years ago. And it's based in historical and political and social context. And so it's hard to change that definition, especially since we currently live in this system, and we've been living in this system for over 500 years. So from my perspective, I come from a Marxist perspective where I see capitalism as needing to be dismantled. And when we talk about wealth inequality and when we talk about class struggle, these things are not separate from capitalism. They're inherent in capitalism because of the exploitation of the labor force, because of the exploitation of the environment. And so I don't think that it's possible to change the values of capitalism. As I said, it's a system that has been defined for over 500 years that's been based in unfettered growth and colonialism and imperialism and oppression. And it's also embedded in the patriarchy, which is over 6,000 years old. And so to me, I see capitalism as needing to be dismantled, and I can talk a bit more about that and how that would look. And I think one of the main questions that we have to ask ourselves is, under capitalism, whose lives matter and whose lives don't?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And I don't think you can ignore, obviously, the history and the social and political and economic context when thinking about capitalism. However, I think where I disagree with you is that I think capitalism in its definition is much more broad than how it's been defined throughout maybe some of your comments. And when we think about history, like industrial capitalism, for instance, is different than capitalism itself. And capitalism has operated in times of imperialism and industrialization and urbanization, but I don't agree that those things are inherent to the true definition of capitalism, which is kind of these laws of supply and demand working through a price. And part of the reason I think that is because of what I mentioned earlier, which are these market failures. And the pricing system just can't work when there are failures and they need to be corrected. And so when we think about ways to like price, which sounds like kind of a yucky term, like price like nature or well-being or all these other things, like they hold value, and that's where this pricing system stems from.
Yeah, I guess my question or response there would be, how do you put a price on human life? How do you put a price on human labor? How do you put a price on the environment? Like, to me, those things have value that is like innumerable. Like, to me, you can't put a price on a tree, and you can't put a price on human life and the labor that they produce for society.
Yeah, I think that's a super fair question. And I just want to be clear that when I say put a price on these things, I'm not trying to say that these things necessarily should be bought or sold, but it is just essentially establishing a universal metric that people can understand that is supposed to represent value. So if you think these things are innumerable, you could absolutely put a price of infinity on something. And when we talk about like pricing carbon, for instance, like these things are data and science driven. It's a carbon price essentially tries to quantify the damage and the harm caused by pollution and carbon emissions to humans and the environment, whether that be through like health costs or all these other different things. And so while it's not necessarily appropriate to value a human life, and I don't think that we should be doing that, you can attempt to value, you know, what they would have to pay at the hospital or what we think it's worth to be healthy and like not have to worry about these kinds of things. And for instance, you know, there's a price that's been established for great whales, for instance, and it's like in the billions of dollars. So while it does feel yucky and it doesn't necessarily make sense to do those things, the distinction I'd like to draw is just that it's not a price that's enabling the buying and selling. It's literally saying, this is how much we value something. And a lot of people don't care about those, but they'll understand this dollar value.
Right. And I think that's just capitalism's way of valuing things is based on price. And I just don't agree with that. Like, I just don't agree with having to put a price on things in order to not to give them value, but to state how much we value them.
I just have a question. I'm definitely a novice this subject, and I'm wondering to both of you, but maybe Michaela, you have an opinion to this, whether these issues of capitalism that you see are inherent to the definition of it and the system of it, or whether it's part of the fact that there's always going to be people that take advantage of systems. And because of greed and like game theory, there's always going to be somebody taking advantage and playing that role, and whether that is why capitalism has ended up being where it is now. Just curious on your take on that.
In response to your point, Jess, I think if we look at history and we understand the history of capitalism as emerging through the breakdown of feudalism from the 19th to the 15th century, we can see that capitalism was born out of the merchant class deciding that they were going to take advantage of the peasantry, deciding that they were going to offer work for a wage in order to make sure that the peasantry could buy into their capitalist system. And so I don't think that it's just people outside of capitalism wanting to take advantage of capitalism. The roots and the history of capitalism is taking advantage of labor in order to produce product. It is through the exploitation of nature and through the exploitation of labor that we have products. And so I don't think it's people external to capitalism wanting to take advantage of the system. It is inherent to the system. And we can see that in history. That's not just my opinion. You can go on Wikipedia and learn that yourself, or yeah.
I just wanted to respond to that because I'll also, like, I understand I'm not going to answer Jess's question because I don't think I'm qualified to, but Jess still has a question out there. I think the only thing I wanted to say is, like, I totally understand where you're coming from, Michaela. I think you're saying, like, the root problem is just the way that it was founded, like the way capitalism was founded and like the structure upon which it was built, if I'm understanding you correctly. And like, I mean, you can even see it in like indigenous, in different indigenous communities in Canada, like this imposition of like a wage economy has drastically degraded their culture, their way of life, their quality of life, their subsistence on the land and all those things. And so I think that that definitely needs to be acknowledged and addressed. And I think my question is like, I feel like capitalism is so widely, not necessarily adopted, but like it's so prevalent. Like Canada is a capitalist society. US is predominantly capitalist. So is Germany. So is the UK. Like all of these big players that just have so much power already are operating under this structure. I feel like it's like a snowball that's just so huge and it's already rolled down the hill that I don't know how to like unroll it. And so I'm like wondering, you know, we are starting to see like increases in environmental social governance. And I know like wage labor and like the way you treat workers is a huge problem, especially in corporations, and it will still be for a really long time. But I do know that like there is a way for companies to operate really ethically, like case in point, like Patagonia, for example. I really like respect and admire their business practices. I think they come from a place where like they want to have a reciprocal relationship with the environment to the extent that a business can. I think a business inherently interacting with the environment will have unintended consequences. But like when you start to see like companies adopt that ESG like ESG framework, and they do treat their workers well, and they do make sure that, like, you know, they're not exploiting the environment. I don't know if that's completely possible, but like, how do you feel about that? Do you think that there is that way that like values in capitalism can kind of start to change and like make a positive impact, or is that not like significant enough? Or like, yeah, I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think just to correct you there, Brenna, I'm not talking totally just about the wrongdoings with how capitalism was founded. I'm also talking about how it has developed as well. And in my opinion, like capitalism has only gotten worse because we see greater levels of exploitation and greater levels of suffering amongst humanity. So I'm not just talking about with how poorly it was founded. I'm talking about with how poorly it has been developed. What was your question again? Sorry.
No, it's okay. I think I was just saying, like, I totally get it that that the framework we, I don't love the idea of like putting a price on everything and having this economy. I'm just kind of saying like, I acknowledge that that's just the reality that I live in. And so when you see things like environmental social governance become more important and like more mandatory for businesses to operate and like for financial institutions to operate, do you think that that is a positive step or like that that could be impactful? Like maybe merging the gaps between capitalism and Marxist frameworks.
Yeah, I think from a Marxist framework, Marx believed in the breakdown of capitalism, socialism as a transitionary state towards communism, which is a stateless and classless society. And so I think that Patagonia, as an example, is a good start towards socialism, because socialism still requires the operation of the state. But ultimately, that would just be a transitionary state towards communism. And, you know, I'm not sitting here trying to preach communism. I'm not sitting here trying to say that, you know, we should destroy the rich and, you know, set everything on fire. Like that's not my opinion here, but my opinion is that I do see, you know, a lot of suffering and I do see a lot of exploitation, and to me it's really at the hands of the system that we currently live within. I don't think, you know, there's a specific person to blame. I really just do think it's this ideology that has just perpetuated itself for over 500 years and continues to perpetuate itself. Again, people who work for Patagonia, regardless of if there's good working conditions or not, are still being exploited at the hands of a CEO or still being exploited at the hands of the founder of that company. I'm not going to sit here and bash Patagonia because I did a thesis on them. I'm literally wearing their sweater right now. Like, I love them as a company, but from a Marxist perspective, like, that is still people being exploited. They're still working for a wage. They're still working in order to survive, regardless of, you know, how much they're paid or not. They're still buying into that system. And there is still a hierarchy. There's someone at the top who's paid more than someone below them, who's paid more than someone below them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So I don't think that I'm not going to sit here and praise Patagonia and say, yay, you pay your workers properly and your garment factory workers actually work within ethical conditions. That should be across the industry level standard always. I don't think that we should put Patagonia up on a pedestal and say everybody should be like this brand. I think actually we should do better. We should be striving for better. I think that in the transition towards socialism, like they're definitely a great example, but it's not the be all end all to what I personally would want to work towards, like within society.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Michaela. Like, I don't think that we should be putting them on a pedestal. They're really doing the bare minimum to be an ethical company. And the more that we put them on that pedestal, the less that message is communicated. I think that you have a lot of interesting perspectives that go beyond us just kind of like picking over the semantics of capitalism. Like, I don't think that that's necessarily the most fruitful thing that we could talk about. But that being said,
I agree with that.
Yeah. And that being said, like, I just want to emphasize for the final time that I think that all the things that you're talking about in terms of inequality and environmental degradation and exploitation, I absolutely agree with. And I consider those things to be as a result of the failures of capitalism that have never been corrected through the course of history. And with that being said, I want to almost circle back to Jess's question, because she mentioned this idea that is it almost inevitable that someone's going to take advantage no matter what system that we're in? And that's absolutely where I believe we're at in capitalism, because we know all these things to be true. Like, I consider it similar to the way that we know about climate change, we know the science of what needs to be done, but it's ignored in policy right now. And so we know what's wrong with capitalism, we know what could be done to fix it, and those things do not feed in to our political system at all, because there is a group of people, powerful people, that are maintaining the status quo, and it's corrupting our system. And there's this give and take between policy and the political realm and the economic realm. And because of that, I don't think we've ever seen this pure form of capitalism that I keep referring to, where like maybe our values could actually be reflected through the market. And from a Marxist perspective, I don't know that we've ever seen a form of communism, or at least not one that's popularized in history textbooks, that has played out the way that it should in theory, in the sense that, you know, there's this classless system that is centralized by the government and it works out really well for everyone. So I'm curious, like, number one, if you think that sort of system is possible through communism, where like there's not that corruption. And number two, I think more broadly, the question is like, how do we establish accountability in our political systems? I think that's kind of where maybe the breakdown is everywhere. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say on that topic.
Yeah, I want to jump in on the note on communism, because you mentioned that communism in practice has diverged from what it was actually meant to be, as per your question. And the two most prominent examples of communism throughout history, so in Mao's China and then in Stalin's Russia, were not examples of communism. They were authoritarian socialist states. And so I don't think that we can say that communism hasn't actually worked in practice, because in the most prominent examples, we haven't actually seen it work. It wasn't actually capitalism. So communism hasn't actually failed yet. Again, I don't know about some of the smaller examples, like maybe some people here do. That's, you know, for me on my own end to do my own research. But I do think that the West tries to villainize communism because it is afraid of the possibility of the system breaking down, and so likes to point out those examples as communism, and to say that communism is fascist and authoritarian in nature, when in reality it's not. And so I do think that there is better alternatives, whether it's communism, whether it's socialism. And I can expand on that, or if somebody else wants to jump in.
I actually just want to kind of clarify my point. I wasn't trying to say that communism is bad. Like, I totally agree with you that it's this thing in theory, and we haven't seen that in real life. And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. And I just think, I guess my question is kind of, or I guess my point is that I think the exact same thing about capitalism. I don't think that we've ever observed capitalism in its true form. And so how can you say it failed yet, based on what you just said, you know? And so again, I guess going forward, I'm most concerned about, no matter what the rules of the game are, how are we gonna make sure that whoever's deciding the rules is deciding that for everyone and not just for that one group? And like, frankly, I don't have an answer to that. So I'm not sure if anyone else has any comments on that, but I think it's like a huge problem that needs to be tackled in any system.
Yeah, I also don't have a solution. I think I just wanted to say, like, I really agree with like everything that Michaela said about what she wants to see out of a society and like what the expectations we should have even for companies. Like, I agree, like, we're not trying to like put Patagonia on a pedestal. That should be the standard, or not even the standard. It should be above that, whatever that could look like. I think the reason why I brought it up was just like, I'm trying to work within like my reality of like what I know to be true. And so I think for me, I wish I could like revolutionize, you know, the way our society works, and we could innovate and like start from scratch. I just think that this is my perspective. I feel like we're in too deep, some 40, whatever they're called. I just feel like we're just like so thick in the mud in this web that for me, the only way that my brain can actually comprehend progress to any extent is like finding who's powerful in this structure that I live in and finding ways that I can make change to that power. Because like I make less than $20,000 a year. I don't have money to run the world or to become a philanthropist and like and create a vaccine for malaria and give it to a developing country. Like I don't have that kind of power. I also don't believe philanthropists should necessarily have that power. That's just the reality of the world that we live in. And so it's like, how can I make the most of what I know to be solutions for a more equitable world under the framework that it operates in? And I totally agree with Michaela that she's like, well, this shouldn't even be operating under this like framework and structure. And so like, that's just where I feel stuck. But I definitely agree with like everything she said. And I think there is like a huge problem with power and the way it's distributed. It's distributed in a very like unjust way. And, you know, moving forward, if we're going to keep capitalism, because I foresee like a tsunami and disaster happening if just like one day we got rid of it, you know, no one would know what to do with themselves. So I think everything would crumble. And so it's like, okay, well, can we shift the narrative under this structure? And can we make it equitable? Can it be fair? Can it be rooted in like reciprocity with our environment? Can we incorporate climate action into this framework? Because it never has been before, but is it possible? I don't have answers. I'm just kind of like, what are the solutions? Is it like moving forward, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, Brenna. And I think I just want to respond to a couple of things you said. So first, I think that you really speak to like the struggle that's inherent for laborers, like within capitalism, for minimum wage workers within capitalism, which I'm assuming we all are here working, you know, full-time jobs, just trying to survive. It's hard to feel like we can make any change in the system at all because we're, you know, one person, we don't make that much money a year, and within a capitalist society, wealth is power. And so it feels very overwhelming when you feel like you'll never be the next Jeff Bezos, you'll never have, you know, or be on your way to becoming the next trillionaire and just have such power through the accumulation of that wealth. And to me, that's one of the greatest failures of capitalism, the fact that we can have one person who's on his way to becoming the next trillionaire and other people in the global south, and not even in the global south, even here in the global north, like suffering at the hands of the system. And we see that exacerbated through the COVID-19 pandemic and through this global climate crisis. I think that if we were to transition out of capitalism, there wouldn't just be chaos. And again, that's my perspective because I've taken the time to understand the alternatives. And I think for anybody listening to this podcast, that would be my biggest recommendation, is just to take the time to understand the alternatives to capitalism, because there is so much theory based in, again, historical, political, and social analysis by great thinkers from throughout history and even today, who have provided wonderful alternatives to capitalism. And I really think that it's worthwhile to take the time to understand that if we were to transition out of capitalism, it wouldn't just be chaos. For me, I think that transitioning out of a capitalist state towards socialism means from each according to their ability, from each according to their contribution. So that basically means that we produce from each according to their ability and from each according to their contribution to the state. Whereas communism is about from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs. So that basically means that we don't have unfettered growth. We don't have exploitation as a result, you know, mass consumption and mass production. We don't see we see less wealth inequality. We see less of the class struggle, and we see more reciprocity between humans and other humans and between humans and nature. And I do think this society is possible, but it's only possible through my understanding of Marxist theory if the entire world gets on board. And the reason why I say that is because there have been attempts at communism made throughout history, and the powers at be, who are, you know, the other capitalist powers, have always made it their mission through imperialism and colonialism to squash those attempts. Because, you know, the greater powers that be, whether it be the US, whether it be Canada, don't want to see communism come about, don't want to see true socialism come about. And there's, you know, many reasons for that that we can get into. And so I think that's important to understand. And I think it's important to understand that chaos wouldn't just ensue if capitalism failed, if capitalism continues to fail and become dismantled.
Thank you for providing that really detailed response, Michaela. I think it gave me an opportunity to kind of understand where you're coming from a bit more. And I feel like it was really well said. But I kind of also want to respond to Brenna's question, I guess. And I thought a really interesting thing that you said was that you consider one of the greatest failures of capitalism, like, the fact that Jeff Bezos exists. And I, like, 100% agree with you. And it quite literally is a market failure of capitalism, which I know I'm a broken record in saying, but, like, it literally is. Like, that's not supposed to happen at all. And so I guess in my response to Brenna, I think that there's a lot of opportunity under capitalism, but I think that, again, it comes from policy. And I think that those two are really, like, impossible to detangle in our current system. And by implementing policies that, you know, establish, like, an ethical framework for labor and for the environmental condition and all these other things, like, you can do literally anything through policy that you would ever want to do. And it's an extremely powerful tool. And in terms of, like, unfettered growth and those kinds of things, like, why don't we just calculate growth differently? Like, there's a type of accounting now referred to as, like, green accounting, for instance, and that takes into consideration, like, how's the state of your natural environment? Because that definitely contributes to society's well-being. And so it's not just, like, growth in terms of profit, but, you know, growth in terms of societal well-being and environmental health and all these other things. And I truly believe that that's possible under capitalism. That being said, I don't think capitalism is the be-all end-all of organizing ourselves. And I'm not sure if, even though I say it's possible, I'm not sure if that's what's going to happen, just based on kind of the power dynamics at play right now. But I would be interested to hear a little bit more from you, Michaela, in terms of, like, if we were to make this transition, I guess I'm curious what you think about, like, innovation and kind of, like, entrepreneurship and all these things that I think capitalism provides kind of a nice framework, in the sense that you can do the thing that you love and kind of progress society. And that's how the incentive structure is supposed to be set up. And it leads to all those, like, wonderful things. And I'm just curious what that would look like under an alternative system, because I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. And also, I don't want to pretend like I know all the answers, because I don't. I'm not an expert at this, and I should have given that disclaimer earlier, but I'm not. So let me make that disclaimer, you know, an hour into our discussion. I think that under socialism, as a transitionary state, or under communism, innovation can still exist, and innovation can still exist in many forms. I don't think that innovation has to exist solely for profit. And I don't think that innovation solely has to exist for the production of an outcome. I think that innovation can exist just for the sake of innovating, for the sake of creativity, for the sake of passion, for the sake of, you know, the love of curiosity. And so I think that is probably where I would see that leaning towards. I like the point that you made about like how capitalism sets up a nice framework for people to succeed at innovation within the system. And I guess the only question that I would beg to that is like innovation for whom? Because not everybody has access to the same level of innovative capability as others do. You know, often it's the privileged and the wealthy few. And I don't think that if you just sit down and strap on your boots, you can achieve anything as the US would like you to believe, as the US and Canada would like you to believe, honestly. And so I think that when it comes to doing what you love, you should be able to do that, not for the sake of needing to survive, but for the sake of just wanting to do what you love to do. And again, that also speaks to from each according to their ability, to each according to their contribution, from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs. My abilities are in writing, my abilities are in public speaking, my abilities are in communicating with others, my abilities are in research. Okay, then I should have a type of job that feeds into those abilities, and I get paid based on the contribution that I make to society. Or I don't get paid based on the contribution that I make to society, I just receive what I need in terms of necessities based on that contribution that I make to society. So that's kind of how I see it.
No, I don't really have anything to add. I just completely agree. Like, I do a lot of just like random side projects, but I work for free. But if it were not for like a little bit of financial support from my parents, I would literally not be able to like afford to live, and I would not have the ability to do those things that I love. Meanwhile, you could have just like a really computer smart person who created code and is now a bajillionaire because he could he could have created, you know, Google if it was something else. Like, that's a bad example, but you know what I mean? So I resonate with that for sure. Because I agree with what Jackie said. Like, I think, yeah, it's great. Like, people can do what they love and it gives you the ability. But like, how is that ability tied to your ability to live in a meaningful, like, quality, like a good standard quality of life?
I guess I just wanted to say, like, as a follow-up to your disclaimer, I'm not an expert either. And I really resonate with what you said as well, Michaela. Like, I work a job for like 5 days a week. I work to survive so that I can make it to the weekend and try and fit in all the fun activities I want to do. And often I can't do them because I either don't have enough money or because my rent's so expensive or like because I need to put in some extra hours. So yeah, like I absolutely agree. It's the worst. And yeah, I don't think that we have good opportunities for everyone right now. Like, that being said, I think a lot of really cool stuff's been done, and that's not because of capitalism. It's kind of in spite of it in a lot of ways. But I think that if there was kind of an equality of opportunity more, I think that that's compatible potentially with the system. And I would really love to see that happen and just see what people are capable of, as I would love to see that under kind of the system that you laid out, like through just making sure everyone's needs are met and allowing that creativity to flow. Like, I think that sounds really idyllic as well. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I guess it could happen any which way. Who knows? I don't know. And I feel the need to add another disclaimer in the sense that I feel like this has felt like a really heavy discussion, and I truly like appreciate the time and thought you've put into this, and it feels polarized. Like, I feel like I'm kind of like on this one side and you're on this other side, and or I could see how it could feel that way, and I don't think it is that way. And yeah, I think that we're probably like really close in terms of our ideology, and so I think this has been really useful for me to kind of learn a little bit more about what alternatives exist, and also think a little bit more about some things I need to reconcile myself with capitalism. So yeah, I just like really appreciate you taking the time and everyone here taking the time to participate and share their thoughts and feelings and ideas.
I just actually was gonna say thank you to Jackie, because you also came very prepared, and your background in this subject area is very clear, like it's very evident, and it's been really impressive to sit here and have a very mature and just honest and vulnerable conversation with you about like the subject area, because I think often like these types of conversations can get turned into a debate, and that is not what I wanted this conversation to be. Like I wanted to just come and be like, here's my opinion, here's how I feel about this subject. I might ask you a few provocative questions, but like that's just to get a conversation going. Like I really just wanted to know your perspective. And so I'm really glad that like we were able to, yeah, have this conversation in a really respectful and vulnerable way. And I think actually it's going to be really helpful for our audience to hear two people with similar but also different perspectives have a conversation on capitalism and on reimagining our society. So thank you.
I think whenever I think of two people on different sides having like a really fruitful conversation, I think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg becoming like best friends with one of the Republican judges she worked with. And I just think it goes to show you like these conversations do not have to be polarizing. Just because you have different opinions or you come from different worldviews does not mean that you can't find similarities in what you want out of life. Like I'm sure you both just want very similar things. You want to have a good quality of life, but you also want that not at the expense of other people. So I just love having conversations like these because it just shows that it is possible to think of, you know, what you want to see the world like differently from somebody else. However, you can reconcile them or at least like find common ground.
I feel like a lot of times like the extremes of both sides are always the loudest. And so when you think of capitalism, you think of like the extremes of capitalism where people say like government shouldn't have a hand at all, like let it do what it will and it will work itself out at the expense of others. And then the same for communism. And then to listen to you both like come from like middle grounds and like me even closer in the middle was really informative and gave, often I feel like when people like, what if not capitalism, then what? And I'm stuck also like what Bruno was saying, not knowing the solution out of it or other possibilities, and it was made way more clear through this. So thank you both.
Yeah, it was definitely like good to hear all of your points. And Brenna, I liked what you said about, you know, just like, oh my gosh, I've lost my train of thought. Sorry, there's a cute dog outside.
Fuck what I have to say. There's a cute doge.
Oh my god.
Sorry. I take precedence.
Oh, I'm not upset. Yeah, Michaela, or does Jackie or Michaela or anybody here, do you want to share? I know we usually end off with like 10 minutes to action, but maybe like 10 minutes to action or 10 minutes you can take to like read a certain resource or to like learn more about something. Do you have any recommendations for some of our listeners?
Yeah, I think for me, there's a really great podcast on Spotify called the Revolutionary Left Podcast, and that is something that I would recommend that everybody go and listen to and really just skim through some of their introductory episodes and just start to get familiarized with the leftist perspective on capitalism and alternatives to capitalism if you're interested. There's a really great episode that I just watched with Susan Green called Dismantling the Patriarchy, and it is one of the greatest podcast episodes I've ever heard in my entire life, and I would highly recommend going to listen to it if you're interested in the ties between capitalism and its roots in the patriarchy. Another really awesome debate that I would watch is called Does Capitalism Help or Harm Women? And it was done by the Cato Institute. And it is more of a formal debate. It's a debate between a Marxist and an economist. But it is something that I would recommend people watch again if they're interested in the ties between capitalism and the patriarchy. It's an area of interest for me. And it's really, really fascinating. Another great podcast is called Introduction to Marx and Marxism, and it's by John Molyneux, and it's like 10 episodes, each of them are like 10 minutes long, and he basically just takes you through Marxism and historical materialism and the labor theory of value and dialectics and all those things. So if you're interested in yeah, the roots of that and the theory around Marxism, I would recommend that podcast as well.
Those sound awesome. I definitely want to listen to that podcast episode. Yeah, I would encourage you to not worry about looking at your old microeconomics textbook. Don't think it's going to help. In terms of things that I find interesting, I'm mostly just really interested in how economics can kind of be a tool for addressing climate change. And obviously in our current state, that involves capitalism and free market economies. And there's a podcast called How to Save a Planet, and it's produced by Gimlet, and it's really amazing. And really all of their episodes are kind of exploring a different environmental solution that I think is kind of designed to be implemented within capitalism. So I would definitely encourage people to check that out. And there's also a really cool IMF International Monetary Fund article / podcast called Nature's Solution to Climate Change. And I mentioned this earlier, and it's kind of just like quantifying all the cool things that whales do, gray whales in particular, for the climate, and how we can prioritize those amazing beings. So yeah, if you want to like read about how this whole valuation process goes down, I know that it's kind of yucky, but it's really cool in some instances too. And if it helps us save the whales, then I'm here for it.
There's also a resource, same woman who does How to Save a Planet. She hosted the climate versus capitalism webinar with Pioneer Works. I'll have to check if it's still available, but it was Dr. Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson, Regine Clement, who's a financial expert who deals with like super wealthy families and how they're investing sustainably, and Naomi Klein, who's done groundbreaking research in all of this. So that's I'll have to check if that's still available, but that was really, really great.
So there you have it. I will link all of those resources in the show notes, and I really encourage you guys to check out resources from multiple perspectives. I hope all of our listeners are able to take something away from this episode, even if that is just to be kind and respectful to one another. So thank you again for listening. You can check out all of our other episodes, including my Vulnerability Talks on Capitalism, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can follow us on Instagram at 10 Minutes of Change. Talk to you guys soon.